God bless you, Tim, as you come and share your trip with us. And I know everybody is interested.
Well, in the bulletin, it was stated that I went on a missions trip. It was not a missions trip. It was a Reformation tour. With the Reformation, that was when the Martin Luther, Zwingli, and Tisdale, John Calvin, they all, in separate countries, decided that the Catholic faith was not the right faith to go. And it started when Martin Luther nailed a 95-point thesis on the Catholic door of the church. And that started it. What happened with that was that it happened all the time with the people of the city, because it's a university, so anytime anybody had a new thought, they nailed it on the church door. But with Martin Luther's, a good friend of his just developed the printing press. So he went through and he started printing this, mass producing these writings, and within 3 years, it was all over Europe. And so that's why it was so widespread in such a big hurry. Where before the printing presses, it was had to be handwritten, everything that they did. So that was one gift that God gave to the Reformation. When we went as a group of 13 people, and one of the ladies is a newspaper editor. And she wrote these two big articles. They're folded up. They're pretty good size. Anyways, this is how she summed it up. 8,832 air miles, 2,610 ground miles, thousands of steps. She took 726 photos. She collects cows. She's got 9,600 some cows in her house. And she gathered 45 more on this trip. Dozens of U-turns, 22 cathedrals and churches, 20 Reformation sites, numerous shopping experiences, 8 castles, 8 countries, 6 hostels, which is, they're like a motel, but they're based for the youth. As they would come into town to work, the youth would stay in these places for, you know, $20 a night instead of renting a big hotel or motel. We stayed in 4 hotels, 4 scenic drives. We had 3 dents on a van, which was not mine. That was my brother-in-law's van. We took 2 boat cruises, 1 concentration camp, 1 canceled hotel reservation, which they tried emailing us when we were on the trip to ask us if we were going to be there that night. 1 canceled van. That was when we landed in Amsterdam. We went up to the counter for the Hertz Rental Center, and they were supposed to have a big 9-passenger van for us. We get there, they say, no, we don't rent those out. And this was already after it's been, we had confirmation numbers and everything, and they say, no, it never leaves the city. That's just a city vehicle. 1 Glockenspiel, which you'll see pictures of later, 1 flower show, and she had this bear with her. There's what they do in their school of her hometown, is if anybody's leaving the town, they have somebody take a little bear with them, and they take pictures of it as a travel buddy, and then the kid does a story on it and then brings it to school as a presentation, and which I had lots of fun with because I got him in lots of trouble. Just to give you an idea of what we traveled, okay, here's Europe. We landed in Amsterdam, went down through Netherlands, into Belgium, into France, back out of France, into Luxembourg, back into France, down into Switzerland, across Switzerland, up into Liechtenstein. From Liechtenstein, we went into Austria, just because we wanted to say we went to Austria. We went in and 15 miles, jumped back out. And then we went into Germany, and then we traveled all through Germany. We went through the Black Forest. We got a cuckoo clocks there for some friends of ours, plus us. We went to Munich, Berlin, Erfurt. And right after we got home is when that school shooting was in Erfurt. You know, so it was different to come home and actually see the name and know that we were there. You know, we were all over the city. So that was, in kilometers, that's 4,100 kilometers we traveled in 15 days. And I was one of the drivers, and sometimes it was stressful because my sister was the navigator, which was in another vehicle. And I don't think my dad taught her much on how to read a map. And so we ended up getting lost. We get turned around. And we had two-way radios, but at times she would not answer me back. So I think she was getting mad at me because I was asking way too many questions. Like, why are we going this way? Where we want to be is that way. And for the first half of the tour, I didn't have a map. So when we'd get into a construction site or something like that, I would have no clue how to help them. So then I was getting frustrated. But then they give me a map, and then I was able to help, you know, from the back seat, you know, how to get to the city where we're trying to go. And one day when we were in Zurich, they got all turned around in the city, had no idea where we were. And they jumped on the radio and says, can you help us find where we're trying to go? I says, yep, follow me. And I drove right to it. And my sister was so mad she wouldn't talk to me because she had no clue where we were, and I didn't have a map at that time. You know, I drove right to where we were supposed to go. But with one thing that I did learn over there was personal, was that it was okay for me to follow. I don't have to be a leader all the time. You know, this was their church group. He's the pastor of their church. You know, he's a Methodist minister. And so at times I felt like I should jump in and say something, but I let it go, you know. And, you know, I learned a lot by that. You know, I don't have to be the center focus of everything. You know, it's time to let other people, you know, shine. But I'm going to give you a little synopsis of Martin Luther, how he got to where he was at. Luther didn't set out to become a world-class leader. He was headed for a career as a lawyer. Those plans were upset when, as a promising 22-year-old university student on July 2nd, 1505, was caught in a violent thunderstorm. Lightning struck so close to him, thrown to the ground and fearing for his life, he prayed to St. Anne that if she would save him, he would become a monk. Luther kept his vow and pursued the monastic life with an intensity that went far beyond the already strict requirements. He wore himself out with the prayer and fastings. He wore out his superiors with his excessive and insurmountable confessions. I kept the rule of my order so strictly that I may say that I ever a monk go to heaven by his monkery, it was I. All my brothers in the monastery who kept me will bear me out. If I had kept on any longer, I would have killed myself with the vigils, prayers, and readings and other work. Then he went on to another quote of his. Is that when he was at his first Mass, he was utterly stupefied and terror-stricken as to the thought of standing before the Almighty God, because he had questions of his faith. And being a monk, he was studying all the time, and he kept running into the same things all the time. About, just like the pastor was talking about today, where two stand and come to God, they are a church. They don't have to come to a big, massive place to come to God. You know, that's, and he kept running into that, and he ended up becoming a pastor of one of the churches in Wittenberg, and he started to stray away from the Catholics, and he ended up with a new church and a new congregation, and he began to preach on his newfound faith, but at the same time, a representative of Pope Leo X, a monk named John Tetzel, was selling indulgences to raise money to finance the building of St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome. Indulgences were letters of pardon which guaranteed forgiveness of sins. So what they were doing is they were selling you a way into heaven. And right then and there, he knew that was wrong. You know, that's it. You know, there's something that has to be changed here. So that's when he nailed on October 31st, 1517. He set up and wrote his 95 theses in Latin and posted them on the door of the castle church, inviting scholars to debate the issue of indulgences. It was no big deal with scholars. They did this all the time. But the printing press was invented. But nobody showed up to debate. And he was kind of upset at that because he really wanted to debate this. But an epic battle ensued. Within 3 years, a papal bull was ensued condemning Luther. He apologized through another level of inner torment in his life. Did he dare stand before the power, wisdom, and doctors of the church and claim his interpretations as Christianity was correct? Before God, he could do no otherwise unless convinced from Scripture that he was wrong. He was branded a heretic, and he was thrown out of the church, and he was banished and condemned by the Emperor Charles V. He was captured. He was to be captured or killed on sight. But he was kidnapped and protected by Duke Frederick of Saxony, who believed in what he was saying. And so he stole him away from everybody and hid him away, and he ended up being a knight. They hid him away. He changed his looks. He grew a beard, grew his hair out. He wore all the knight gear, and he hid away in a church. And there he rewrote the New Testament in German so that the common man could read it, because at this point it was still in Latin. So the normal people, the common people, could not understand it. So within a year, he rewrote it all into German and started printing it and passing it out so the common people could see it. He poured out all of his energy and study, thinking, writing, and translation of the New Testament into a German that everyone can understand. Later, he returned to Wittenberg to deal with the crisis there while the ideas and writings spread across Europe like water from a burst dam. The Reformation could not be stopped. Over there, you'll see on these pictures, the cathedrals are huge. Over there, state and church is not separated. Your town taxes go to the church. That's why they're able to build such big places. And we had a lot of fun. Another one of her writings as to what we did on our trip. This is what David had wrote to us before we went on our trip to get us ready. As a study tour, we'll engage in the study to learn about the significance of the Reformation and to its impact of our lives today. I can't pass by any interesting or important attractions. Therefore, we will be doing some sightseeing that has little to do with the Reformation. For example, we'll visit the Berlin Wall Memorial. Although this has nothing to do with the Reformation, we'll justify it by rationalizing that the Berlin Wall is Germany, and so was Martin Luther. Good enough. Then he went on to write another statement. As with all travel, we'll probably run into a number of snags and complications. I will guarantee, however, that if you are just a little bit crazy, love an adventure, and don't mind wondering about your tour leader from time to time, you'll have lots of fun. And I do have a copy of the 95 Theses, if anybody wants to see it and read it, of what he had wrote. They'll be downstairs. To be honest, I was at all these sites, but I don't remember everything, so it is all wrote down. And we run into another snag. The remote quit on this thing, so now I got to do it by hand. Yeah, probably will. This, if you don't know, is an airplane. Me and my wife, I was on one when I was probably 2. But that's as much as I remember, and my wife had never been on one, so this 8-hour flight was very interesting. Any little bump, my wife was ready to fly. This is our 2 vans. You can see mine's a little smaller. It's a little funnier looking. It's called a Fiat. It's only got a 1.2 motor in it, and traveling speed, it was at about 6,000 RPMs. So she was just a little hummering going in there. 6 people would fit in there, but no luggage. So all the luggage went in the big van, and then the rest of the people were in the bigger van. And this was before any of the dents happened on the big van. This is the Our Lady Cathedral, which is a Gothic cathedral. It was built in between the years of 1352 and 1521. This is in Antwerp, Belgium. The tower rises 375 feet. When you see these things, you just imagine the scaffolding going up the outside. You know, today we'd never build a building like that without a crane. You know, and they did it all with scaffolding. This is around the town square. The church is to the back of you. The people gather a lot in the town squares. They do a lot of shopping there on Saturdays and Sundays. They have open-air markets. People set up and sell all their vegetables and their meat and everything for the whole week. And then you come back again and buy the next Saturday. This is some more of the town square. This here is in Brussels, Belgium. This is the Jubel Park celebrating the independence of Belgium in 1905. It's a big palace and museum and everything. This is where we're entering France. Not much to do with the Reformation, but. This here is This is a World War II concrete bunker just inside the French border. This is on the Eastern Front. The Germans would hide in these and fight out of them. Okay, now we're in Reims, France. This is the Notre Dame Cathedral. It was built in the 13th century. And it's considered a Gothic because of the Gothic architecture is that it comes to a point. The arches come to a point. And here's some of the exterior of it, all the intricate stuff that somebody had to carve and chisel. Here's the interior of it. You'll notice that the designers of these made them really tall. That was as you walked in, you were supposed to look up, and it was supposed to bring your eyes onto God as soon as you walked in. These are some of the stained glass that's in it, and you can see all the figurines on the end. Those are all hand-carved. They didn't have carving machines. And this here is the pipe organs. Now on to Luxembourg. This is Luxembourg City. They're standing on the casements, which is a medieval wall. That's where the guards hid and protected the city. You can see it goes all the way around there on the right, all the way around. Kyle, were you ever in Luxembourg? This is inside the casements. There's a cannon with my brother-in-law, David. There's lots of steps to go down. It's I think it was like 200 and some feet tall, and so they got steps to go all the way down the inside of it to the bottom so they could fight and work their way up. Now we are in Geneva, Switzerland, at the University of Geneva. This is what's known as a Reformation Wall Monument, commemorating the great Swiss reformers, John Calvin and Theodore Beza. Right here is the museum to the Reformation. It's actually got the first Bible that was translated into German in there. We run into a lady who... I think she was 70-some years old. But anyways, that's all she's done her entire life, is studied the Reformation. And so she gave us a lot of insight to the Genevan history of the Reformation. And she was very soft-spoken, but, you know, we was all able to hear her in her museum. And she was just there to pick up some more reference material. This is David standing at the pulpit of John Calvin. And my little niece Rebecca there on the right. But that's the original pulpit that John Calvin preached at. Now we're in the Swiss Alps. I really enjoyed the Swiss Alps. They're they're farther back than we are when you're in that area, because you know a lot of their barns and stuff are still connected to their houses, and they walk their cows down the streets. There's maybe one guy in the whole town that owns a tractor to go out and spread the manure and clean the manure away from the barn. Still did their haying with pitchforks and wagons. This David, the reason why this is in here, because we're just picking on him, that there were sheep up on the hillside and he's drinking out of the water. Not knowing the difference. Now we're still in the Swiss Alps. We're eating at a restaurant here that overlooks the medieval town. The original town is down there in the peninsula that sticks out, and there's a bunch of old buildings down there. We didn't have time to go down. This is the Brunner See, which is in Brienne, Switzerland. We had stopped there for a rest stop and picture stop. Seems like Russ is in a lot of these pictures. I think he was looking for cameras. Now we're in Luzern, Switzerland. You can't really see it much, but it's a medieval bridge that used to go, that they had to cross the river before modernization. There's a guard tower there yet for protecting both sides of the city. There's a little three-wheeled car there that's a pedal bike. Must get a lot of rain there or something. Now we're in Zurich, Switzerland. This is the old town. The church spire from the left is the Grossmünster. Then you got the St. Peter's in the middle. And then the Frauenkirche on the right with the Swiss Alps in the background. This is the Grossmünster where Zwingli first preached against the indulgences, beginning the Swiss Reformation. Zwingli and Martin Luther come together to try and unify both the Swiss and the German Reformations, but they could not agree on the baptism and of the communion. They didn't agree on either one, so they couldn't come together on the Reformations. This is still the Grossmünster with Thomas Bullinger on the right side of it. You can see just a small statue of him. He was the pastor of the Grossmünster and succeeded Zwingli as the leader of the Reformation in Zurich after Zwingli was killed in a war. This is the Grossmünster on the left and the Wasserkirche on the right. Just another church. Now we're standing in front of the Zwingli statue at the Wasserkirche. This is Zwingli's house, which you couldn't prove it by me, but that's what it said. Still part of the old town. The church spire is the Predikirche, which was Zwingli's church. It's still at the Predikirche. Nothing too fancy. We don't have no dates down here. But yeah, this is still in Zurich, Switzerland. You can see when the Reformation come through, you can see that there's no colored glass or nothing in there. And everything was, what they did is they went through when the Reformation took over, is they busted out all the glass and then put it with clear glass. They took out all the idols in the inside, chiseled everything off. If there was an idol that they couldn't get off the wall, they made sure at least they got the head off, so you couldn't tell who it was. They basically cleaned up the church. So the Reformation churches are all basically clean, nothing in them. But then when you go to the Catholic churches, they still have all the idols on the wall and they still have all the little prayer corners and stuff, and all the candles lit. Yeah, this one's kind of dark, but that's my brother-in-law in the pulpit of the Predikirche. I don't know what this has to do with the Reformation tour, but it was a dinner cruise. Still in Zurich. This is what's known as a smart car. This car, you can park it, you can parallel park it, or you can pull it straight into the parking spot. It fits both ways. Yeah, and it's not much room in there. I don't know how I'd look riding in it. Probably just about like I did riding in my plane seat. This is us trying our first bratwurst, which was still in Zurich, though, but it was our first one. The guy on the right just had heart surgery, was it March, before we left. And he's sucking down some grease. Here we are entering Germany from Austria. Does anybody recognize this castle? Been to that one? Yeah, it's the one that Disney copied his castle off of. And then if you watch the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, this is the one where he lands at the end. He's in this castle. They were doing a lot of work on it, so we weren't able to see a lot of it. This is the front gate walking into it. How'd you like to walk up to it, Mark? Did you take the bus ride up or did you walk all the way up? Well, you should have took the bus ride because I don't know if the bus knows where it's going or the driver does, but we're doing about 50 down that hillside. And the bus was just flying back and forth and there was no slowing down. And there was no guardrails, no nothing. This is on the inside of the front gate. Right to the left is where he lands in his in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. This is where we're taking our first public transportation. We had been doing everything before this by dropping the people off and then finding parking spots. By the time we'd get back, everybody would already see everything and me and David wouldn't see a thing because the parking is horrendous. Everybody over there rides bicycles or motorcycles or scooters because there's no place to park. The city streets are so small because they were made back in medieval times that they only had to get a horse and a cart through. Well, now you got parking on both sides. You know, it just doesn't work. That's one of the trains, above ground trains. Here we are in Munich. This is the Rathaus, which is the town hall. This is where the Glockenspiel is up there in the green part. That plays at 11 o'clock, and it commemorates two things in German history. One is a marriage that happened between somebody, I don't know, and some big party that happened. And the top one goes first, and then after the top one goes, then the bottom one goes, and it's steam-powered. And here's one of the figurines that's in it. This was during the dance. They're about life-size tall. They're pretty good size. And it actually runs pretty smooth. It's not as jerky as I thought it would be. This is St. Peter's Church in the background. This is the largest church in the landmark of Munich. This was completed in 1488. Somebody else did it. The slide that we bought, not that we took. This is the Frauenkirche Cathedral. It's brick Gothic, and it's got onion top towers. Here's the interior of it. You can see there's some of the idols were brought back out, and the stained glass was brought back in. This one here is the tomb of the Holy Roman Emperor Ludwig IV. When you go to these big cathedrals like this, you see this all over the place. They've got tombs to different people, and they're actually in there. It's not just a shrine to them. This one was, though. This is St. Peter's Kirche. This is a broke interior and altar. I didn't actually go see this one because I was cathedraled out by this point. But I wish I would have when I seen this. with all the gold inlay and everything all over. Just imagine how long it took somebody to carve that out. This is on the dome, the painting. This is the high altar. These got sun bleached. They must have been sitting on the dash. This is what we didn't go see this either, but this is the Royal Theater. We went shopping at this time. Here's the interior of it. I don't know what that had to do with the Reformation, but it was there. This is the Theater Kirke, which is St. Cajetan's Church. This is High Baroque. It was built in 1662 to 1690. Then we leave Munich, and we head to Dachau, which was the first concentration camp that was built. This concentration camp was actually built for church leaders and for anybody that spoke out against what Hitler was doing. This, all of his opponents were put here. This was not a killing concentration camp. What they did here is they're the ones that built the roads and stuff like that and rebuilt the town around it. But it was still pretty amazing to be there. And I don't know, with all the pictures that they have on the walls of things that were happening, how that group of people can say this never happened. After being there, with history in school and stuff like that, I've seen all the pictures, but to actually be there and see it. The little monument there in the middle, I don't know if we've got a better picture of it. Click here and see. I can see part of it anyways. Is a monument to all the dead people that were in the graves when they come upon it. In the background there, you can see where they all in the barracks. When the Allies freed them, they burned every building because they were so full of lice and disease, they didn't want it to get out of the concentration camp. But then afterwards, they rebuilt two of them to show people what it looked like in there. And the one on the right is actually the hospital. That's where they were doing some medical studies. They didn't do a lot of the underwater tests and stuff that you read about, but they were still doing some of the medical tests, to see how much pain people could handle. And then the one on the left was actual barracks, and they were stacked four bunk beds high, three people to a bunk bed. You can see where they had all the barracks at on the right. And then on the left, you can see the guard towers. You can't really tell it. Okay, we're facing the wrong way. See it. This is a sign on the entrance gate. I don't read German, but it says, "Work will set you free." So what the Germans were telling them in the concentration camp, that if you worked hard, we would release you. And it was a total lie. It was just to get more work out of them. Now we're in St. Augsburg, Germany, or Augsburg, Germany. This is St. Anne's Kirche. This is the monastery where Luther sought sanctuary in 1518. You can't barely tell it. No, that ain't it. That's actually the crematories. Sorry. The crematories here were just built, but were never used. And the gas chambers were on the right and the left in Dachau yet. They were never used, so now we're at St. Anne's Kirche. Here's the interior of it. See, no stained glass. This is the organs at the end. There's a picture of Martin Luther. This is a painting that's on the wall, done by somebody famous who I don't know. I'm not an art person. Now we're in Ulm, Germany. This is the Munster. It was started in 1377. It's got the world's largest spire in the world, which is 534 feet. and it's got 700 steps to the top. You can walk all the way up there, but in as good a shape as I am, I didn't attempt it. You can see it more. You can see we were there on a weekend. You can see all the open air market in front of it. This is the flying buttresses on the sides. If you were able to take off on the left, you can see those points that stick up, straight up. If you took one of those off, or a couple of them off, the church would collapse. The flying buttresses hold up the interior of the church, kind of like a truss today, but they were on the outside of the buildings. This is some of the stained glass on the inside. Get it in better. This is what part of the Bible is this? It doesn't say. Sometimes the stained glass will tell you the story, whatever they're trying to portray. Sometimes they got the apostles. Sometimes they got the birth. This is a Methodist church that we found in one of the villages in the Black Forest. No difference to us. These here are German, this is a German museum for what their houses used to look like. The barns there too were still in there, in their houses. There's a bunch of different styles, different areas of how they built their houses. You can see a little closer, the barn is on the bottom, the house is on the top. And then the hay storage is above that for insulation. This here is, this was the blacksmith shop. You can see the inside of it there. See the bellows on the top. This here was the sawmill. Now we're in Speyer, Germany. This is called the Kaiser Dome. This is the Cathedral of the Kings. It is where most of the German kings were crowned and buried. See it from the backside. Some more of it. This is the interior. You can see the red and white brick or block that they used. This is down in the crypt, down in the basement of it. And then here's the tombs to the kings. Another tomb. The spire is important to the history of the Reformation in that it was at a council held here in 1526 that allowed tolerance for the Protestants. It was revoked at a later council held there in 1529, but they actually said that it was okay to be a Protestant. The tombs, there's eight kings and a Holy Roman Emperor in there. Now we're in Heidelberg, Germany. There's an old castle up there at the top. It was destroyed by the French in 1689 and then later struck by lightning. This is a stone bridge considered by some to be Germany's most beautiful bridge. It wasn't nothing to me. I didn't see no fancy nothing in it. It was just there. Okay. There's number one. You guys bored yet? Okay, this is Worms, Germany. This is where the Holy Emperor come and basically put Luther to death, but this is where they kidnapped him and took him away from. Here's the interior of it. We went to Mass here. It was all in German, so we didn't understand much of it. But a lot of it we did understand because it had to do with the lambs and about Jesus being a shepherd, because they used a lot of children to come in and do a lamb's verse but we also went to Mass in Luxembourg when we were there, and they actually did it in three different languages. You had French, German, and English. They sang Amazing Grace in English. So part of that we were able to understand. So, and I did stay awake there just like I do here, so even though I didn't understand it. And here's the altar. This is the oldest Jewish cemetery in Germany. With Luther, he was an anti-Semite. He did not like the Jews. So that's one part of his history that's a mark against him. You know, he hated the Jews. So, you know, that was when I found that out, it was even tougher after that. This here is a monument commemorating all of the reformers. Martin Luther is up on the top. I don't know what this has to do with the Reformation, but we went on a Rhine River cruise. This is a river highway that they used back in the Dark Ages for travel, and they brought a lot of goods up and down this river. And they set up toll booths on the river. And you had to pay to be able to travel past all these toll booths. And they could be a mile apart from each other. They could be a half mile apart from each other. So you had to pay a lot of money to go downstream. And then what they would do is they would fight between castles that were above the toll booths because they were starting to get greedy. Okay, if I got one, I might as well have two, I might as well have three. So you'll see there's a lot of castles all the way along this river. There's a castle there, and on the left, that's known as the Lorelei, that hillside there, that's 400 feet tall. Anyways, the legend there is that a witch used to come out and sing and mesmerize the guys, the captains of their ships, and make them run aground in the rocks. So. That's a toll booth down on the right, another old castle up above it. This here is just the half-timbered houses. This is what you see a lot of in Europe. What it is they built the wood first, and then they filled the inside with cow manure, horse manure, and straw. And they filled the insides of those timbers and then painted them. This is a castle that we stayed at. This is actually a youth hostel. You see some of the boat traffic down there. On this river, the boats still, they have apartments on the boats. The people never leave the boats. You can see their cars on top of it, motorcycles or whatever, but they stay on the river with their families. They can go by and you'll see that they have a fence with a big playpen in there for their children to play in without falling off the boat. And it was pretty interesting to see all that. I'll see if I can find where I'm at. Oh, okay, we're in Cologne, Germany. This is the largest Gothic cathedral in the world. There's some more in the front of it. This is in that gold case in the middle is supposedly the three Magi are in there. It was brought back from Milan, Italy, to this cathedral in the 1100s. That's what they say, so I guess we have to believe it. There's a close-up picture of it. Cologne, Germany. This is some more of the stained glass. This is depicting the three Magi worshiping baby Jesus. Now we're in, well, actually when we were in Cologne, in front of that cathedral, I run into a bunch of football players that were there on vacation. And it was pretty interesting because I could hear them in the background, all these big black guys speaking Ebonics. And it was something that you did not hear in Germany, you know, people speaking this. And I had to turn around to see who it was. And then I walked up to him and introduced myself to him. And, you know, after we got talking to him, they said, "You don't know how amazed we are to find somebody over here that speaks English." And, you know, because all we run into is everybody that speaks German and they don't understand us. And because of their lingo does not fit over there. And the one guy, his head was about the size of a basketball. He was one big guy. And he towered over everybody else, but he was very nice and very cordial. And they talked to us about 45 minutes. One of the guys was actually a Viking football player. But he was over there playing for the European League. Okay, now we're in Marburg, Germany. This is where they tried to come together to do the Reformation again, to combine the Reformation between Germany and Switzerland. It did not work again. This is Landgrave's Castle. Part of it again. This here is Wartburg Castle. This is where, following his condemnation of Worms, Luther was put into hiding also here for a while. This is a castle that we stayed in Arnstadt. This is one of the travelers with us. And I don't see Bullseye anywhere, so I must not be. Bullseye was the bear I talked to you about before, and this is where I got him into a lot of trouble, was in this place here. Here's one of the rooms that I had for me and my wife, but somebody just about broke my pinky off getting the ring of the key to get into it. Because what I did is I took all the keys. I knew which one it was for this room, which is the honeymoon suite of this castle, and I had it sitting on my pinky. And I had them all in my hand, and I handed them out to everybody to pick the key they wanted. And they weren't supposed to grab that one. And once they felt the little tug against it, they knew that's the one it was, so they pulled hard. So I tore my pinky off. This is David getting in trouble with his church group. They're punishing him. Here's Erfurt, Germany. The church on the left is where he was. This is where he was ordained, or is this where he was baptized? He was ordained as a priest on the left. And he was preached to thousands of people from the square, from the outside pulpit, along the steps between the two churches. I'll have to get up and show you where this is. There's a little pulpit that sticks out right here that he would preach from to get all the people of the town up to the steps. A lot of times they wouldn't preach inside. They would preach outside because the common man was afraid to go inside. So he would preach outside. There was another church that we was at. There was just a little brick, I'd say probably 2 feet by 2 feet, that stuck out of the church, and that's where he stood and preached. He's said to have preached to 10,000 people here. This is a medieval bridge that they built houses on top of and shops. This is the monastery where he was a monk. This is where he would have sat. This is one of his rooms that he lived at. Another one, that's what they say, so that's what we believe. Actually, in the movie, we were there, and they were getting ready for the movie. That's the room that they were cleaning and getting ready. This is supposedly the room where there's an ink spot on the wall where he got mad at the devil for coming into his head, and he threw his ink well at the wall, and supposedly the ink is still on the wall. I don't know. I didn't see it. This is his 95 Theses. They put it in metal now because the door used to be wooden, but now they put it on the metal door. Made it all out for everybody to see. Here, where are we at? This was... Okay, wrong one. It's just another church. This is some famous painting. Close up of it. This is the altar that he would have preached from the inside. This is his house. It used to be a monastery, and then he took it over. And actually, he had a bunch of people that lived with him, people that he was teaching, and everything. And anybody that would come by that was a reformist would stop here and stay for a while. Now we're in Berlin. You can see in Berlin that tall communication tower in the middle with the round ball on the top. We don't have a picture of it, but that was built in East Germany when the wall was there. And they built it to show that you don't have to have God to do stuff in Germany, that they can do stuff without him. But after it was built, they got it all done. They unveiled it. And the way the ball was built and the way with the curves and stuff on it, it depicted a great big cross right in the middle of it that shined down on everybody in Germany. And so they got mad, and they went up there with sandpaper and tried cleaning it all off. But every day that the sun comes up, you can still see the cross coming from it. And there's another spot where right across from the wall, they had built a building but tore down the church. It was on an island. And the big building was sinking. And the engineers told them that the only way that they could keep the big building was to rebuild the church on that same island. So they ended up having to rebuild the church to keep it from sinking. So even though all that, God still prevailed. This is just some sights. You can still see that communication tower there. You can see somewhat of the cross there to the right of it. Barely. This is a church that was bombed, and they just left it the way it was after the war was over. It's just some more buildings. That's the Rat House, the town hall. This one here was... This is the Reichstag. It was rebuilt after Hitler had it burned down in 1933. Some more of the city. St. Mary's Church. It was the only church in Berlin not bombed during World War II. There's a closer picture of it. States Theater. This was part of East Berlin. This is the Philharmonic. New, of course. This is the International Congress Center. This is Sony Center. A bunch of different shops on the inside. While we were there, they had a bunch of things on TV where they were saying that they were trying to rebuild Berlin completely. They want to completely destroy all of Berlin and to rebuild it to unify Berlin. So there is no East and West Berlin anymore. They want to get rid of everything that has to do with East and West. They want to try and unify everything. So they want to go through block by block and tear down and rebuild. This is a new synagogue. Here's Checkpoint Charlie. This was the only border crossing between East and West Berlin when they were divided. This is what's left of the wall. There's only one block that's left. Everything else has been torn down. And they do have, at this point, they've got cobblestone that goes all the way through the city of where the wall was originally. So you can still see where it was. And one of my comments were, yeah, sure, so now they know exactly where to put it back. This here was what's left of the basement of the hotel of where the SS took over and where they were right on the backside of where this wall is. This is our last meal together as a group. Me and Val are not there because we're out getting something to eat. and this is actually some sites that we did not see, but I'll just go through them, show you the pictures. This is Charlottenburg, Germany, a palace, another building, I don't know, the inside of it. Kind of looks like my bedroom. this one here was in Nuremberg. No, Dresden, sorry. Cathedral of Holy Trinity. This is Prague. Were you there, Kyle? You didn't go to Prague either? Okay. In the town square of Prague. That was John Hess's house. He was another one of the reformists. You can see the fuel prices there. That's per liter, but there's 30 Czech krona to a US dollar, so it's still under a dollar per liter. Here they're standing on some famous bridge. This here is in Nuremberg. This is where the Nazi party rally grounds were. This is where you can see all those pictures of Hitler with all of his followers there. It's inside of there. It's another part of it. And then at the end of the parade grounds, you could see that there was a big swastika. Well, that's used to what sit on top of this, but when the Allies took over Berlin, they shot it off the top. This is the Frauenkirche, which is Our Lady Church. Another palace. Grounds, green water. More of the gardens. Wasburg, Germany. Frankfurt, Germany. You can see the modern skyline starting to be taken over. This is my niece. They're trying to see if she fits in the carry-on. This is before they leave. There's a plane. So you can see we did a lot of stuff in 15 days. I'd like to go back. So if anybody's crazy enough to go back with us, you can come see me. We'll make up some time to go. But on page 41 of our hymnal is a song that Martin Luther wrote.
It's interesting, this song, because the last couple of days, it's really been on my mind, and we were going to do that this morning. And Gail said, no, it just doesn't fit in there, so let's not do that. So I came walking in here tonight, And Tim walks up to him. He says, I'm over here digging out overheads. And he looks at them. He says, do we have a Mighty Fortress as our God? I said, well, in the hymnal, yeah. He said, we got to do that one. So I told her. She looks at me, you're kidding. No, I'm not kidding. But it's, you know, we do a modern song. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into him and are saved. A mighty fortress is our God. I mean, we still draw back to those same ideas. Same Bible, same scripture, same God.
A mighty fortress is our God.